So the Dhamma for today is the four chakka. Chakka. Chakka means wheel. Word should be familiar if you remember the Dhamma Chakkappavattana Sutta, the turning of the wheel of Dhamma. The wheel of Dhamma is one of the kinds of wheels. This isn't talking about the Dhamma wheel. This is talking about the wheels of virtue. The analogy here is four things that allow travel, allow for progress, allow for the continuation, for the undertaking of a journey. When we talk about vehicles, we're usually concerned not with the wheels, but with the engine. And the analogy with the practice is usually about the quality of the engine of Dhamma. So the mechanics of how our practice goes. But without four good wheels, your practice can't progress. And likewise, just like four wheels can't, are required to make four wheels, without four wheels, progress of the vehicle can't occur. In the same way, without these four things, our progress goes with difficulty. And to some extent, these four things are worldly, and to some extent, they're not completely under our control, and certainly to some extent, they're not things that you can immediately accomplish. So a part of the teaching here is going to be about appreciating how sometimes our practice doesn't go smoothly, and often it has to do with things like these four chakka. The four chakka the Buddha taught in the Anguttara Nikaya Book of Fours, the Chakkavagga Chakka Sutta. And the four chakka are Patirupa Desa Vasa, dwelling in a suitable location, suitable place. Sapuri Supanisaya, depending on Sapurisa, again, we see the importance of sapurisa in everything. Good people, good advisors, good teachers, good company. Number three, atta samapanidhi. Directing oneself, directing the self or oneself rightly or in what is right, samma. And four, pube katapunyata, having done good deeds in the past. These four, the Buddha said, are the chakka, four wheels. So, Patirupa Desa Vasa, three of these actually are from the Mangala Sutta. So we see the Buddha using these teachings, the same teachings obviously, in different contexts. We have the very beginning, the second verse of the Mangala Sutta. Patirupa Desa Vaso Pubejakata Punyata Atta Samapaniti Ja Eta Mangala Muttamang. These are great blessings. Patirupa Desa Vasa, dwelling in a suitable place, is obviously something that in a worldly context has a lot of importance. Our livelihood, our security, our stability, our prosperity depends on, to some extent, on our location. We need a suitable climate, a suitable economic situation, politics. People are concerned with these things. They're concerned with the stability of their location. Often they find themselves caught up in politics or economics and even the environment. And these are not deep teaching. This isn't something that's directly related to our practice, but even for meditators does have a potential impact on our practice. Even the environment. We notice that in certain places in the world, pollution is so great. We've all had this experience of the pollution being so great that it can actually, to some extent, disturb your practice. But there is a difference between what is a suitable location for economic or social prosperity and meditative prosperity. Obviously, a place like this, living in the forest, on the top of a mountain, is not great for one's worldly prosperity. So it's a good example of how location is important. If you want to be rich, if you want to be prosperous, living up on the mountain might not be the best idea. On the other hand, dwelling in Colombo is certainly not the best place and will certainly have an impact on your meditation practice. It's certainly possible to practice, and especially the practice of mindfulness doesn't require as much concern with location. However, for the long term, the health of body and the health of mind that comes from living in nature, not to mention the peace and the tranquility that comes from not being bothered by people, large crowds, busyness, the ceremonies that come from monasteries that are in urban areas and so on, the constant influx of visitors, gives us a unique opportunity to continue our practice. I think the general lesson, especially for the broader audience, is to be mindful. Even mindful of your housing, people will often realize that their dwelling is problematic for the continuation of practice. Dwelling in with certain people, or in a certain location, with certain accommodations, can be a disturbance to your practice. On the other hand, again, especially with the practice of the Buddha's teaching, what makes it special is that though we can acknowledge there is hardship and difficulty that comes from an imperfect environment or situation, location, on the other hand, oftentimes it's these challenges that bring out the wisdom, that help to test us and to teach us in ways that comfort and peace sometimes can't. It can be that if you're living in peace and comfort all the time, that it's hard to progress, hard to see impermanence, hard to see the unsatisfactory nature of things, and hard to let go. It's easy to fall into a sense of complacency. In some ways, that's a reason for coming into the forest. It's not actually as comfortable as one might think. We think of coming to the jungle as like a vacation. Well, certainly on a vacation it's fine, but to live in a remote area the most basic of facilities can be a hardship physically and a challenge mentally, having to deal with the very simple lodging and accommodations and the lack of stimulation, especially if we were raised and brought up and lived in more urban areas. It can be a bit of a challenge. But regardless, with mindfulness, the best lesson here is that we acknowledge the unavoidable nature of hardship that comes from our environment. And rather than always try to fix it, we just acknowledge it as a part of life. And we learn to, rather than find the perfect situation, we learn to let go. But for progress, and the Buddha said, for happiness, location is important. It's why we set up meditation centers. We're considerate of the location and we set them up in places like this. The second, relying on wise people. Well, we talk about this a lot. Here, I think, for lay people, the idea is not to live with wise people. It doesn't mean, it means you don't have to live in a monastery, but I think part of the idea here is the word upanisaya means depending on them. So it could mean living with them, coming to stay in a meditation center, being ordaining as a monk and living with the Buddha or with the teacher. But on the other hand, it for lay people, that's of course often not convenient, not really feasible. So the dependency here is dependency on their teachings. This is why people come to the monasteries, or why they seek out teachings nowadays, why we look for teachings on the internet, why we find ways to ask questions, why we have these Q&A sessions to allow people the opportunity to ask their questions. This sort of dependency on teachers is essential. There's often a danger of overestimating your own understanding of reality. And so you see people who undertake practice on their own, or set themselves up thinking they know the truth without relying on instruction or without relying on guidance. To some extent, we don't need a perfect teacher. We don't need the Buddha to be able to teach us, because it's much easier to see the problems of others. It's much easier to see what's wrong with someone else. Much harder to see our own faults and our own misunderstandings. It's a great danger if we start to think that we know the truth and that we know better than those who have come before us. And so we rely on wise people to correct us for attaining right view, but also for attaining humility and a sense of investigation, rather than complacency, rather than thinking that we know everything already. We have an attitude of investigation, making sure that we're not wrong, and trying our best to adjust and let go of the clinging to views and the hardened attachment to our own ideas. Relying on good people, it's an important way to help us let go and to help us see the truth. The third is setting ourselves in what is right. And so this relates to the dependence on a teacher, the dependence on good people, but it's sort of the pair, you know, the complement. So on the one hand, you have that which you get from others, and on this hand, you have what you have to do for yourself. So you rely on yourself and you rely on others. You can't rely on other people to practice for you. No one can set you in what is right. If you don't listen to them, if you don't take their advice, if you don't follow their teachings. So on the one hand, if you practice on your own and try to find the truth for yourself, well, you'd better be on the level of a fully enlightened Buddha. Only a Buddha could do such a thing. But on the other hand, even with all the teachings in the world, without listening, without appreciating, without giving up one's own views for the teachings as they've been handed down, you need both. This is the complement. These two complement each other. We rely on teachers, but we also rely on ourselves, meaning we have to do the practice. You have to keep ethics. If you're not ethical, you won't be able to focus and calm the mind. Your mind won't become clear and tranquil. And if your mind is not clear and tranquil, if you don't undertake the practice of mindfulness, the practice of meditation, and the cultivation of samadhi, then there will not arise wisdom. You won't be able to see clearly. Practice. This is our practice. So this is one of the four wheels. You could say this is the essence of it. Setting oneself in what is right. In a more general sense, it means knowing the difference between good and evil. In a more basic sense, more worldly sense, for people living in the world. generally setting oneself up, keeping the five precepts, being focused, and well, still practicing meditation. I mean, I think there's no sense that lay people are exempt from the need to practice meditation. If anything, a daily practice is more essential to counteract the distractions of worldly life, setting oneself in what is right. Without this, this is perhaps the one that we have the most control over here and now. Even finding a teacher can be difficult, and we have to appreciate that we struggle because we don't have the Buddha. All we have is teachings that he gave to others, which are sometimes universal but are sometimes specific to those individuals. We don't have any teachings that are specific to us. There's no teaching in the Tipitaka that the Buddha aimed directly at us individually. So we're at a bit of a disadvantage, and it's going to be rough going. But as far as setting ourselves in what is right, well, this is the most rough going, but it's all on us. We have the opportunity to smooth out our lives, to straighten out our lives, and to create great peace and happiness and prosperity through our own cultivation, the practice, moment after moment, hour after hour, day after day. Not in one go, but over time, setting ourselves right, seeing our faults, not paying attention to the faults of others, paying attention to our own faults. What are we doing wrong? And fixing those day after day and year after year, even lifetime after lifetime, if it takes that long. And the fourth, pube katta punyata, is a really interesting phraseology. The Buddha isn't saying doing good deeds. He doesn't say doing good deeds is one of the four wheels. He says having done good deeds in the past. And this likewise with the blessings. This is one of the greatest blessings. Doing good deeds is not a blessing. Having done good deeds is a blessing, because I think the point is that sometimes the good deeds take time to bear fruit. It can be quite a hardship and quite a thankless activity to do good, to be a good person. Sometimes it seems to bear no fruit. Certainly that isn't true, and it bears fruit immediately on your state of mind. It creates strength of mind. But in terms of hardship, in terms of the smooth going of your practice or of your life, in terms of prosperity, doing good deeds is often a thankless job. It doesn't seem to make things easier. A person who is kind and good and generous and mindful and wise will often have the hardest life of them all, having to deal constantly with nagging and criticism by those who are less enlightened or less pure. People who are generous are constantly going to be bothered by those looking for help, those looking for aid. Those who are mindful and wise are going to be often disturbed by family members who wonder why they're not engaging in sensual pleasures, not engaging in entertainment and diversion and immorality. We'll often be upset and disturbed by how uninterested they seem in worldly things, in them even, how there's no longer an interest in family or relationships or society. So pube katta punyata. More importantly and more seriously, our practice is at a real disadvantage if we haven't done good deeds in the past, mainly talking about past lives. If we come into this life having, we don't even know what we've done, but if we come into this life having little goodness in our history, We'll see it, and we'll notice it throughout our lives. Obviously, we've all lived many years already. We can get a sense of how much punya we have done in past lives, what we come into this life with. Some people are born with sickness. Some people are born poor. Some people are born with a poor memory even. unable to remember the Dhamma even a little bit. There was one monk who couldn't remember anything. They thought he was useless. But it turned out enough. Chulapantaka. His older brother became an arahant and just thought he was useless. He said, "You must be useless. You should really just disrobe." Couldn't remember a single verse. And so he thought, well, my older brother isn't the one who ordained me. I guess I better go see the Buddha. So he went to see the Buddha, and the Buddha said, "Oh, that's not why we consider someone useless or hopeless." And he thought back to Chulapantaka, you know, Chulapantaka's past lives, and he recognized that in a past life, Chulapantaka had deeply understood impermanence. That in one life he had been a king, and he had been riding on his elephant in the hot sun, and kicking up a dust storm, and there was dust and heat, and he was sweating, and so he took this pure cloth, the king, and wiped his face, and realized it had gotten grimy, and it just struck him how the purest of things are subject to decay. Nothing lasts. That this beautiful cloth is now gone. It was just a moment of contemplation, and that really stuck with him throughout his life. And so the Buddha gave him a cloth, gave Chulapantaka a cloth, said, "Go and stand in the sun and rub this and say, Rajoharanang, Rajoharanang." Rajoharanang means taking out the dust. So it's a pure white cloth with no dust or no stain on it. And he's supposed to go and stand in the sun and say Rajoharanang, taking out the impurities. And as he did this, as he stood there minute after minute, even an hour, how long he stood there in the hot sun, the sweat and the grime started to rub off on this, not a brown, it was a white cloth, you know, pure white cloth. And it got impure. And he started to appreciate his own impurities and resonated with his past goodness that he had performed as a king. And he became an arahant just standing there realizing impermanence. Now, not likely that the Buddha is going to come along and give us such a meditation subject. The point being that Chulapantaka actually had an intense amount of goodness from past lives. He must have done a lot of good deeds apart from that, but this one stuck out. But his goodness allowed him to have a deep appreciation of impermanence. And as a result, he was very quickly able to become enlightened, appreciating the Buddha's teaching. I don't know if any of us have that. It's not likely. The fact that we didn't meet with the Buddha, or if we met with the Buddha, we're such a failure that we didn't get anything, and we have to come back so much later. It's clear that we're all failures if we did meet the Buddha. We must have been the people who ignored him, or probably we weren't even born in a place near the Buddha, which is a very unfortunate thing. We're the wretches. We're the dregs. But on the plus side, it's clear that we all have some great merit. Well, first of all, we have the great goodness of having been born a human being. We must have done something right. Because for an animal to be born a human being is almost impossible. What could they possibly do to lift themselves up to be born as human beings? We must have done something right. That's quite special. On top of that, we've met with the Buddha's teaching. Well, even before meeting with the Buddha's teaching, we've lived a healthy life. We have lots of good qualities, but the greatest quality is that we've managed to meet with the Buddha's teaching. Not only the chance to hear about the Buddha's teaching, but also the right view and the right inclination to want to hear about the Buddha's teaching. It's clear we've done some things very, very well, not to mention our great fortune. We must have done something great to be able to come to a meditation center, a monastery, to even have the opportunity to ordain. Many people never have this opportunity and would very much do very much to have this opportunity. I know one student who's talked about going on a hunger strike until he had permission from his parents to ordain, following after the tradition of Ratapala in the time of the Buddha. So that's a great blessing, and that's something that helps us go. But ultimately, our practice is most likely going to be a rough road. It's going to be a hard challenge. It's going to be a mixture of a lot of getting it wrong, both in getting on the wrong path, both in terms of indulging in pleasant situations when it gets too comfortable, and then losing track of the practice. And that's because of a lack of goodness. We have a lack of clarity and wisdom to not get attached to the good things. But more obviously, our lack of goodness is just going to bring a lot of harm our way. It's going to bring a lot of disturbance. There's going to be a lot of hardship. Certainly throughout our lives, I think everyone can remember times of hardship. As human beings, even the Buddha wasn't of perfect merit. The Buddha had done bad deeds as a bodhisattva, or before he was a bodhisattva, that even in his last lifetime bore fruit. That he got sick before he passed away, that was because of something bad he had done. Even the 6 years he had to spend before he became enlightened was an anomaly. Most bodhisattvas don't have to do that. Even the Buddha was lacking in punya. Even the Buddha was facing this sort of hardship. So if someone so pure and so perfect had to face these sorts of things, we certainly will have to as well. It's an acknowledged part of the practice that as you progress in the practice, some bad things you've done can bubble to the surface and cause you difficulties just because you're practicing well. So sometimes we have to appreciate that it's a sign of good practice that we're paying back our karmic debts, that we're paying up for the bad things that we've done. Sometimes strange things happen to us. And as mindfulness meditators, all of these things, well, the things like the effects of not having done good deeds in the past, or lack of a good teacher, or not staying in a good place, can be taken as objects of meditation practice. The results and the hardships and the challenges, it's all part of the practice. It's not something we are in control of. We can't control our location all the time. We can't control our environment to be perfect for us. We can't control other people to be available to teach us. We can't wish for the Buddha to be here and to teach us directly. And we certainly can't do anything about having not done good deeds in the past, or having failed, or having a lack of good karma. Nonetheless, all of these things we have some power over changing in the present, especially the third one, with setting ourselves in what is right, but even more, or just as much, doing good deeds now. There's this parallel saying that what they say about the environment. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time to plant a tree is now. But why? Because it takes 20 years for a tree to have any meaning or value to human beings at all. Punya is even more significant. It can take a lifetime for punya to bear fruit, our good deeds to bear fruit. But if we don't do it now, we'll end up with the same wretched existence and wretched difficulties that we've met with in this life. Our inability to ordain early, the fact that we've spent so much of our lives to get to this location. Certainly if we dedicate ourselves, we can in the future have an even better opportunity. And as far as not meeting the Buddha, many people have made the determination that through their practice they will meet with the next Buddha. I'm not suggesting you wait that long, but it's an example of even people who may be discouraged, thinking that they have no opportunity to practice, no opportunity to dedicate their lives to the practice, being in debt or being caught up in worldly decisions and worldly obligations. It's not something we should fret over. We should even more dedicate ourselves to whatever goodness we can perform. Charity, of ethics, of meditation, mental development, and all the other kinds of goodness, that if they don't bear fruit in this life, they will connect us with goodness and keep us on the path and heading in the right direction. So we will always meet with Buddhism and with good people, and eventually, if we haven't become enlightened, even meet with the next Buddha, Maitreya, when he arrives. So these are the four chakra. The Buddha said they lead to five things: danya, danang, yasso, kiti, sukhang. They lead to fortune, wealth, status in society, fame, and most importantly, happiness. So these are things that the Buddha said, deva manusa, in angels as well, make use of these things. This leads them to prosperity and happiness. And of course, are four things that implicitly are important on our path to the realization of the Buddha's teaching and freedom from suffering. So that's the Dhamma for today.